What if your personal or business brand was so focused and so on target that it was easy for everyone in your organization to understand? What if you connected with your clients on an emotional level so deeply that they never forgot you? This is what the most successful brands in the world do. It's not about ad budgets. It's about developing a consistent brand, no matter the industry, location, or size of the company. Discover your brand and create an amazing, foolproof marketing strategy. This is the Brand Archetypes Podcast, hosted by Kevin Scarrett and Amy Zander, owners of BrandArchetypes.com. Join them on a journey to discover your most powerful, true brand.
Welcome back to the Brand Archetypes Podcast, everyone. This is Kevin Scarrett, and as always, I am with Amy Zander. Amy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good today, Kevin. How about you?
Just great. So I have to tell you, I told you a little bit about pre-show here, about a conversation, but I'll give you kind of the full lowdown here. We had my stepson, my wife's middle son, Drew. He's 26 years old. And he was visiting us and we were staying socially distancing and meeting each other out in the backyard and having a nice visit and a meal. And a conversation included a commercial that Francie saw, an Oreo commercial, where she said, "Oh my gosh, that commercial was so awesome. I went out and bought a pack of Oreos." And Drew was visibly outraged by this. I don't know if I'd say outraged, but it definitely led to a lengthy conversation about how he feels manipulated when he looks at commercials. And so the conversation ensued, and this probably went on for 20, 25 minutes, where we were talking about, is marketing manipulation? Are commercials of a certain nature manipulative? Is that ethical or not? And, you know, understand that he's got a degree in ethics in college, and so he's got some pretty strong opinions about ethics. So it was a really, really interesting conversation. We turned around and got back onto this discussion of Nabisco and Oreos, and I asked him, I said, "Are you aware that every single week I do a podcast about branding?" And he goes, "No, I'm not." I go, "Oh, well, interesting. I think it might be worthwhile if we do an episode on Oreos and Nabiscos in light of this conversation where, you know," and at this point, other than seeing the one commercial, I hadn't, you know, taken a dive in evaluating whether I thought Nabisco was doing things right or wrong, whether they stayed consistent, whether they're truly tapping into an archetype. You know, and none of these questions were answered. I just told Drew, I said, "You know what? I think I will take a peek at Nabisco and Oreo and see what we think, you and I think about them as a brand," and to also discuss this bigger topic, the ethics and manipulation of branding and marketing. Is it truly that or not? So, you know, I want to make sure that we wind up with that discussion. What do you think?
Yeah, that sounds great. I've had this conversation with several people in different contexts about marketing. And so, and you and I have talked about it. And so, yeah, towards the end, we'll definitely talk a little bit more about that. And I think it all has to do with a couple of things. One is your feeling about the word manipulation, and if you feel like that's a wholly always 100% negative word, or there's some wiggle room there.
I think that you're only using that word to try to change my opinion.
Yeah, well, I might be. and then, you know, also it also comes down to each individual person still has their buying power decision. That's never taken away from you, no matter how powerful the manipulation might have been with the ad. So anyway, we can get into that later. But I also was very intrigued by this when you told me about it. So yeah, like you said, we did some diving into the history of Nabisco and Oreo and the brand architecture. We also have a podcast, a previous episode on brand architecture. If you're curious about that, you can go back and listen to that past episode. But that's just kind of how companies are built, and they have parent companies and child companies and things like that. But so Nabisco was created in 1912, and I think back then it was called the National Biscuit Company.
Or Biscuit.
biscuit company. Yeah. And then it was the Oreo was kind of created as an imitation of the Hydrox cookie that was made by the Sunshine Company.
Yeah, I think Hydrox are still around.
I was going to say that. I thought too. Yeah, yeah. And the Sunshine Company is.
Yeah.
And then in 1981, Nabisco merged with Standard Brands to form Nabisco Brands, which merged with R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company in 1985 to form R.J.R. Nabisco. So, so this also goes to sometimes you don't always know exactly everything the company who makes your favorite products, everything else they're making.
All right.
Then in 1993, Kraft General Foods acquired Nabisco cereals from RJR Nabisco. And this is the cereal brand that we now know as Post cereals. Mm-hmm. And then in 2000, the Philip Morris companies owned by the Altria Group acquired Nabisco and merged it with Kraft Foods in one of the largest mergers in the food industry. And then in 2011, Kraft Foods announced that it was splitting groceries and snack foods. So Nabisco became part of the snack food business, which took the name Mondelez International. So that's the little lowdown on the whole history of Nabisco and Oreo cookies.
So let me just say, wow.
It kind of
goes to show that, you know, when you are buying products or, you know, the buying and selling of the companies and their divisions and the products and the services that go on all behind the scenes. Wow. Like you said, you'd never know. Interesting when you mentioned the Altria Group. Pretty sure that's a Canadian company. It's one of the largest companies in the world. And my bet is the vast, vast, vast majority of listeners have never heard of the Altria Group. And for years, I used it as an example of extremely large companies with extremely large budgets who still purposely don't have brand awareness campaigns. They don't necessarily want the brand to be out in the world. They're kind of like a holding company. Mm-hmm. So Philip Morris, you know, which is the big, you know, the Altria Group owns Philip Morris and their association with the tobacco industry. Pretty obviously, the Oreo cookie company under Nabisco, under Philip Morris, under Altria, you know, associated with Kraft and everything else that you said, you know, they don't want to have that tobacco association. So,
I think you use this example one other time, like Hidden Valley Ranch dressings is actually owned by the Clorox.
That's right.
Company or something. So that's another reason why they don't, you know, market that and put that out there. That's kind of weird.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's the whole brand architecture that always has to be considered, which you just covered, but there's also other parts of the brand is the identity, and the Oreo cookie has changed its name several times. So let's take a look at that. In 1912, it was called the Oreo biscuit, and then in 1921, they changed it to the Oreo sandwich. Not a huge change. 1948, it became the Oreo cream sandwich, and then in 1974, and since, it's been called the Oreo chocolate sandwich cookie. So it started out as a biscuit, turned into a sandwich, and then now it's a sandwich cookie.
And now they have like crazy flavors. They have so many. It's not even just chocolate. Like they have like birthday cake flavor and mint flavor. So that chocolate in their name is not even.
Even that. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, really when it gets down to what we consider kind of the meat and potatoes of the brand, it's not the name. It's not any other part of the identity. It's not the logo that's stamped into the cookie. It's not, you know, it's none of that. It's how do they market themselves? How do they connect with their target audience? What are the emotional connections? So let's kind of take a look at some things that we can see that they've done. And obviously the easiest thing for us to research are TV commercials, because Oreo has pretty much always had TV advertisements. So
sure. But I do want to point out that you said the meat and the potatoes of the brand, and I think you should say the cream and the cookie of the brand.
The cream and the cookie. Yeah, that would be more on brand. There you go. Oh, and also let's note that we're going to be talking about these videos. All of the links to the videos are going to be in our show notes. So we're going to talk about them. We're not actually playing them in a video format here. But definitely worth visiting a couple of these because it's pretty awesome. And again,
it'll make you feel like a kid again.
that was right, just right. Brand awareness oozing. Yeah. Okay. So tell us about the first TV commercial that we have listed, Amy.
Yeah. So this one is from the 1980s. It's a pretty classic TV commercial. It's short, and it's all about the feeling of being a kid. And I think the slogan in the commercial is "For the kid in all of us." Mm-hmm. And it's a woman, and I was reading briefly reading the comments and stuff on the video on YouTube, and people were debating on who that actress was in the video.
Who did they say it was? Because she did look familiar to me, but this is 30 years old. So.
Yeah, I know. They were saying they thought it was Sarah Purcell or Dinah Shore.
I think it's Sarah Purcell.
Yeah, I didn't think it was Dinah Shore. Anyway. Yeah. So the commercial is basically her enjoying the heck out of an Oreo. She twists it off. She licks the inside. She eats the cookies. And she's got this big, beautiful smile on her face. And it's just she's eating it exactly like we remember eating Oreos as a kid. And so and then with the slogan "For the kid in all of us," it's just pretty completely straightforward. The innocent archetype.
I would agree with that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So the next one. Let's fast forward from the 80s and go all the way up to 1997. The commercial, it's still all about feeling like a kid, those kid-like feelings, but it also throws in a very clear relationship between a father and his son. And let me tell you, dang, that little kid is so cute. It would be very interesting to research to find out if he ended up doing more acting, because that little kid just, like, I think I got diabetes by watching it. It was so sweet. But again, pure innocent archetype all the way, just hands down family values, family innocence, little kids. And, you know, it's all warm and fuzzy stuff. So, yeah, innocence.
Yep. And then the next one, I'm not sure exactly when this came out, 2000s for sure. It's definitely more modern. And it is a holiday commercial. And it shows an elf. He comes into a convenience store, and the convenience store clerk's kind of tired, not really paying attention. And he can kind of just see the head of the elf because he's short, you know, wandering around the store. Santa's waiting outside in a sleigh. And it's cute because the elf brings like a cup of soda and then some Oreo cookies up to the counter. And it's his first day on the job, and the clerk kind of teaches him, no, we do this with milk. We dunk the cookie in the milk, and he shows them how to unscrew the cookie. It's really cute. And then, you know, yeah, it's definitely a really cute commercial. A little bit more of a storytelling idea there. And it's a little less direct, but, right. you know, who else believes in Santa but little kids? And, well, and you, Kevin, I know you.
Well, yeah, there's that.
but yeah, I mean, it's definitely that, again, that whole innocent, the it's got innocent wrapped up in innocent because it's got the elf's first day plus, you know, just the whole concept of Santa Claus. Yeah, it's really cute.
Yeah, you know, the fact that it's taking place at a convenience store and, you know, you're buying your munchies late at night and, you know, got the bright neon lights outside.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, that's, it has kind of a real feel to it. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, for the next one, I really like this one. It includes the slogan, "Life is sweeter when we come together." It takes place at like a carnival or a fair or something like that. And it's stuffed animals interacting with each other. So immediately it has this innocent childlike thing because, you know, where else do you see stuffed animals but in kids' rooms and things like that. And it has this kind of subtle call to politicians and politics. It's a stuffed elephant and a stuffed donkey working together to get milk and Oreos for themselves and for their little friend, a stuffed kitten. So even though it has that kind of subtle political thing in, and the commentary that life is sweeter when we come together, trying to have the message that we should not be so divisive, it still has that feel-good stuff. It's at a fair. It's got childlike feelings. It's, you know, stuffed animals and fuzzy things. And it's despite their attempt at that subtle message, it's still a pure innocent archetype pitch, I think. What do you think?
Absolutely. I agree with you. And wouldn't life be so much more simple if we could just very simply work together and come together.
Right. Right? Especially if it involves milk and Oreo cookies.
Right. That's right. Absolutely.
That's right.
Yeah. So the last one that we have on our list here was recently released, and it did take some pretty heavy fire and outrage from conservative religious groups. And this is the one that grabbed Francie's attention, that made her go out and buy Oreos, right?
Right.
So, yeah. And I have to say, when I watched this for the first time, I completely teared up. Like, oh my gosh, it's so good at the emotional storytelling. And the actual video itself doesn't really have a whole lot of dialogue or sound at all in it. You just have to watch the story kind of unfold, and it's very beautiful. But the commercial shows a young woman coming home to visit her parents, and she brings her significant other. And the commercial ends with the father in support of her daughter, so because her significant other is another woman. And he kind of is standoffish during the whole commercial, and she's not really sure how he feels about her lifestyle. And then in the end, she finds him outside painting their white picket fence in front of their house with rainbow colors. And it is just beautifully done. It really captures that whole storytelling.
But Amy, what does that have to do with cookies?
Well, it doesn't, but it's like, I know. And I mean, that's that whole still going back to the brand that Oreos has stayed true to, is that family, innocent relationships, and that whole family, that family thing. And, because of how controversial the underlying topic is of this, this story, we have to wonder if this is veering away from the innocent brand a little bit, because innocent is all about not creating stress and not creating any sort of.
But that the warm, the immediate, as soon as they rounded that fence and saw what the dad was doing.
Yeah.
The immediate, because mm-hmm. you got it. You understood the love that this father has for his daughter surpassed anything and everything else that could possibly be confrontational, that this was an act of love. And that is innocence, you know? So, so the big question I have is, and interestingly, this commercial kind of follows on the heels of a commercial that they did back in 2000. Well, actually, it was an entire campaign back in 2012. Nabisco ran an Oreo commercial that was focused on the LGBTQ Pride Month. And they created not just a commercial, but a visual of a cookie where instead of a single layer of white filling, it had six or seven layers in this hugely stacked Oreo cookie, and they were all rainbow colored.
Nice.
Yeah. So those images back in 2012, and now seeing this again here, very obviously Nabisco is not worried about offending a part of their target audience, that they're okay with making a statement that, you know, it's a statement of inclusivity and, you know, open-mindedness. And that kind of runs against, in a lot of people's minds, well, most businesses are afraid to do things like that because they're afraid of offending anyone, right? So right. I would prefer to very powerfully move and secure raving fandom with 10% of my target audience at the risk of offending, you know, an equally small portion, as opposed to being everything vanilla and, you know, 90% of your target audience is happy, but your marketing is kind of lukewarm and tepid, right?
Right.
Yeah. Right. So the only way to get those raving fans is to make strong emotional connections. And sometimes you have to do things that are risky to establish something that's powerful.
But still in your archetype, for sure.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you got to stay there.
And any of those people that have a problem with that can go eat Hydrox cookies.
That's right. Absolutely.
There is an alternative.
Eat Hydrox.
If Oreo is too alternative for you, there is an alternative Oreo called Hydrox.
That's right. So, Drew, if you're listening, I hope you're listening, I think that we've demonstrated that the Nabisco brand, or the Oreo brand, has stayed very true to their innocent archetype, that they truly are an innocent archetype, that they have been consistent over the course of at least 40 years, that their most recent commercial, I think this is the point, their most recent commercial isn't simply meant to be controversial or to basically manipulate people. It stands at the very end of what we have found to be a great series of commercials that are powerful, they're consistent, and that they have stayed true to their established brand strategy. So bravo, Nabisco, for continuing to do great brand work. And it explains why, I think Oreo is one of the strongest cookie brands in the world.
Yeah, I agree. And they're just delicious anyway.
That's right. So this whole idea of manipulation, what do you think about, is marketing manipulation? Because that's really the gist of the conversation that I had with Drew, is it unethical to try to sway people's emotions purely for the idea of selling a product to them that they may or may not need?
So I don't always view the word manipulation as a negative word. So overall, it's kind of a double-edged sword. So yes, I do think that advertising is in a way manipulation, but is that bad? No, not always. So I think if you were trying to scam somebody, like calling up somebody and trying to scam them out of, some of their money, or lying to them, or just purely pitching something that was trying to dupe one over on them, yeah, that's manipulation and it's bad. You shouldn't do that. But for advertising in general, our world is based on commerce, and people make things that they then need to sell. And in order to sell things, you have to get the word out about your thing and explain to people why they need this thing in their life to sell it. And so I think that that's fine. I think that, finding a brand archetype, tapping into a strong emotion, storytelling, pulling at the heartstrings or making people laugh or whatever to convince them that they need this thing in their life is good marketing, and it's how we do it. And as consumers, yeah, we can get sucked into that, like Francie did, where she rushed out and buy a package of Oreos. But like, so what? She wanted some cookies and she bought them, and she bought Oreos because she liked the commercial. She could have bought 50 other varieties of cookies, but she bought that one because of the commercial.
And it's not like anyone was stopping the other cookie companies from making equally good marketing.
Right. And so, but the one thing that I really, we have a mutual friend, and I got in this conversation with him. He was originally born in England, and so he sees things a little bit differently from here and different advertising around the world. And I've never lived in another country, so I don't know exactly how they do things, but I'm fairly worldly and watch marketing a lot. But my point to him was, okay, even if they are trying to manipulate you, you're an adult, and you still have the ultimate decision about whether you're going to go out and buy that thing or not. So the responsibility you still have that. And I don't think that there's any marketing that's so amazingly powerful and mind altering that when you watch it, you're just going to blindly go out and buy that thing. I mean, that's just not how it happens. So then he brought in the whole thing about like, well, what about kids? What about kids when they're watching commercials and they see this terribly unhealthy sugar cereal and they need to have it or whatever? I'm like, okay, fine. They might bug their parents to buy it, but the kid isn't going to drive their own car to the store and spend their own money and buy that sugar cereal. Like, mm-hmm. There's still the decision to buy something is still ultimately and always yours.
That's right.
So that's what the distinction I was trying to make. And then we got into the whole discussion about retargeting and that whole creepy feeling where you feel like the internet's listening to you because you see an ad about something that you were talking about or whatever. And so then we got into that kind of thing, and I'm like, well, I still don't know. Like, I'm in marketing and I still don't always have 100% clear idea about how that stuff works. But I also said to him, I'm like, well, from a marketing standpoint, I would rather be shown ads for things that I might be interested in buying than have all my time taken up with stuff that I would never buy. Right. When I go onto my Facebook feed, I see things that I've either clicked on before or similar to something else I've bought or whatever. I'm like, oh yeah, how handy. But if I were to be shown like tools or baby formula or diapers or something, because my kids are a lot older, that's of no interest to me. So right. I think it can be handy and helpful and those kinds of things. If you look at, if you use the word manipulation, is not always a negative, terrible word.
Right. Also, the idea of manipulation is this is in your face, and it prompted this discussion with our 26-year-old son. Let me be clear. He said, I don't have a problem with it. I understand why they're doing it. I just don't like it. So that is his perspective, right? But I said, in the conversation, we both agreed that there shouldn't be some kind of government control against it or something. That would be, you know, anti-capitalism and, you know, too much government interaction and, or, you know, control, right? But I pointed out to him that this idea of psychological manipulation, it doesn't have to be overt and in your face like this commercial. You know, is it a coincidence that the placement of products at the checkout line are like they are, or that certain products are put at eye level in the middle of the aisle at the grocery store, or signs are configured or over a certain aisle a certain way, or products are batched together and put on the end cap at a grocery store. You know, there are thousands upon thousands of subtle ways that companies put their products into your face and into your brain. And this is all part of marketing, you know? Mm-hmm. But the most powerful way to get your product into a person's brain is to actually establish a connection, not for the sake of manipulation, but to have that person really feel like there is a true connection. And if a company does that consistently and they're doing it authentically, one of the main points that I said to him is the Oreo cookie company creating a commercial is very obviously for the sake of commercial advancement and profits, right? But that's not to say that it's for some nefarious evil reason. It's not just all about money. You know, what about the employees of the company whose families depend on their jobs, right? Having a successful company supports the community, supports the county and the state, supports the country, supports the families that are involved. There's prosperity that comes from successful business enterprises that go above and beyond the simplistic view of, you know, capitalist success, but of profits, right? So there's that. That's all part of the mix as well. So I think we came to an agreement that Nabisco is doing things very successfully from a brand perspective, our perspective of a brand perspective, and that's a good thing. So bravo.
Absolutely. And what a cool conversation that commercial, you know, evoked in a family meeting that you guys had, and, you know, you guys got to really stretch your thought processes and have that conversation. That's awesome. That's great.
Well, okay. So here you are, Amy. Your kids are how old?
They are almost 16 and Henry is 13.
So you are embroiled in eyeball deep in the teen years. And so our five kids were all in their teen years when Francie and I first got married, and that was hard. Let me tell you, the conversations that you will have when they hit their mid-20s, it's a world of difference.
I mean, and I was thinking too, I mean, you know, our kids are, we've raised them to talk, to have these conversations with adults and have their opinions, and we listen to them, we talk about these things. And when you were talking earlier about you'd rather hit it out of the park with 10% than have a mediocre, lukewarm kind of campaign, you know, there's some companies that are, you know, not open on Sunday because they're very Christian owned, or they have they've taken a stand on the LGBT community in a way they don't support it or things like that. And my daughter, being in support of that community, you know, she won't go to those companies. Uh-huh. Whereas there's other people that we're related to that are against the LGBT community. And so they like would only go to those stores. So it's so interesting. So like whether, no matter, and I'm not trying to start a big debate about this, but I'm just saying like be true to yourself, be true to your brand, be true to your company. And if you do it well, the chips will fall where they may, the cookies will fall where they may, and you will have loyal customers that believe in the same as you do, and the rest of them you don't really need to worry about. Either way, whatever way you go, politically or whatever, and as long as you're not offensive.
Right.
And that's never going
to
work.
But to some people,
this is offensive.
Well, no, I think that yeah. it is. The people on either side of those topics. That was my point of that 90-10 commentary is risking being offensive to a segment of your of the population. It is true risk. You may lose them and never ever get them back again. The question is what's the offsetting benefit? You know, the offsetting benefit might be that you've quadrupled your overall sales because, you know, you've trimmed off 10% of your audience, but you've doubled or tripled your effectiveness with those that remain. And so not being afraid of risk is a part of this process. And you have to consider risk if you're going to try to do something powerfully. Because it's just too easy to be lukewarm and, you know, milquetoast and ineffective.
Well, and like all things in life, whatever you're doing, you're never going to be able to please everybody. So just stick to be true to yourself, true to your brand, and you really can't go wrong.
Be true to your school.
Be true to yourself. Yes. Yeah. So if you, our listeners, have a brand that you'd like us to evaluate, please let us know. Because clearly, Kevin and I like to talk about this stuff and do have opinions. So I have
at least one opinion. Sometimes I'll have two or three.
At least. And I might be able to manipulate you into another one. You never know.
That is right.
So, but, you know, you have to understand that most companies do not have a strategically focused brand. And a lot of them aren't doing this brand archetype thing that we're trying to, you know, do world domination brand archetypes. So it might, you know, depending on the brand or whatever, it might make an evaluation less interesting, but that doesn't mean that we won't evaluate it. However, send us an interesting topic. We'd love to talk about it. We'll give you our 2 cents for it. And as always, you can connect with us at brandarchetypes.com on all the social media platforms at Brand Archetypes. And if you're wondering what an archetype is, what your archetype is, or anything about archetypes and this word archetype that we keep talking about, contact us, go to Brand Archetypes, and we'd love to help you get started.
Yeah, and first place to start, brandarchetypes.com. Take the questionnaire. That will definitely get you going. And thanks, Amy. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We will talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
You've been listening to the Brand Archetypes podcast. Are you ready to discover your company's archetype? Check out brandarchetypes.com, where you can download the book, find out about archetype-specific strategies, connect with us on social media, and sign up for our newsletter.